Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast.
We are one church that meets in various locations across Greater Manchester.
For more information about who we are or where we meet,
please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
In 2021, there was a poll done in America by Ipsos, and they wanted to get to the bottom of what impression people had about Christians. And so they found 3,199 people, so quite a big sample size, and they just asked them, what words come to mind to describe Christians? And then they divided this group of people they'd asked into three. So one of the groups were people who would say, I am Christian, so they'd identify as Christian themselves. They had a middle group. They were people who didn't identify as Christian, but did say, I'm a person of faith. So they practiced different religions or different faiths. And then group number three are people who say, I don't have any faith of any kind. And they just said, come up with some words that you would use to describe Christians. And then they came up with a list of the top five words for each group. So what are the five words that Christians think are the best words to describe Christians? What are the five words that people who are not of faith would use? And what are the five words that people of different faiths would use to describe Christians? I'm going to get you working now. Someone give me a word that you think is on one of the lists.
Hypocrite.
Hypocrite, yeah? Deluded? Okay. Which lists are we thinking here? The ones over on this side. So hypocrite and deluded over here, yeah? Any others?
Bible basher.
Oh, 2 minute ones. So go again.
Bible basher.
Bible basher. Sanctimonious.
Republican.
Judgy. Republican. All these kind of words. Lots of answers. Not many of them sound positive, do they? I'm going to show you the answer. These are the words. So, Christians came up with these words. Giving, compassionate, loving, respectful, and friendly. That's the impression we have of one another. But then if you ask people who aren't in the room, people out there, what are we like? No, these two lists are very similar, aren't they? The top four answers match. Judgmental, hypocritical, self-righteous, and arrogant. Other faiths do give us friendly as number five. No faith just kind of put the boot in with unforgiving as well. Do you think maybe we've got a bit of an image problem?
Yeah,
maybe it's an image problem. Maybe there's a reality problem there as well. Now, I think this is skewed a little bit. I think there's a lot out there that takes the name Christian that is anything but. And actually next week we'll get into that a bit more. And yeah, that's quite a stark result of a survey, that these are the things that people get from Christians. At the time of Jesus, there was a group of people who lived exactly like these lists over on this side. These were the Pharisees, the religious elite of the time. And that whole modus operandi was being hypocritical, was being judgy, was not practicing what they preach, but getting on everyone else's back about what they ought to do. Jesus, on the other hand, had a vision for what life as a disciple should be like. And the Sermon on the Mount that we've been in over these last few weeks, as we've been going through Matthew's Gospel, he casts a vision for the life of a disciple. And it looks way more like these words over on this side. This is the vision that Jesus had for his followers that we've been seeing emerge from this big block of teaching. It's actually the biggest block of teaching in the Bible from the mouth of Jesus as he walked in the flesh, the Sermon on the Mount. And we're coming towards the end of it. So this week and next week, we'll get to the end of the Sermon on the Mount, then continue on our journey through Matthew's Gospel, seeing some of the other things that Jesus did and said. Today, my purpose isn't to critique other people. So it's not to say, hey, you see all those people out there and how judgy and how hypocritical they are. Let's be a bit judgy of them for being too judgy of other people. That's not what I want to do. What I want to do is think about these things in ourselves and our own hearts and our own lives to step into something a lot more like this vision that Jesus had for his kingdom and for his followers. We're in Matthew chapter 7. If you have a Bible with you, please do open up. And our focus is going to be verses 1 to 12. I'm really going to major in on verses 1 to 6. So I'll read the first 12, but our theme is going to revolve around the first part of our passage. So Matthew chapter 7, this is Jesus speaking, and he says this. Do not judge so that you may not be judged. For with the judgment you make, you will be judged, and the measure you give will be the measure you get. Why do you see the speck in your neighbor's eye, but do not notice the log in your own eye? Or how can you say to your neighbor, let me take the speck out of your eye, while the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your neighbor's eye. Do not give what is holy to dogs, and do not throw your pearls before swine, or they will trample them underfoot and turn and maul you. Ask, and it will be given you. Search, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened for you. For everyone who asks receives. Everyone who searches finds. And for everyone who knocks, the door will be opened. Is there anyone among you who, if your child asks for bread, will give a stone? Or if the child asks for a fish, will give a snake? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good things to those who ask him? In everything, do to others as you'd have them do to you. For this is the law and the prophets. So he starts with that punchy statement, do not judge so that you may not be judged. This has become one of the most well-known, most quoted, favourite Bible verses of a generation. Do not judge. And you can see why. No one likes being judged. What's Jesus saying? What's he trying to tell us here? Well, I looked up what it is to judge in the Cambridge Dictionary, and they had three definitions which will appear on here. And I think it's clear that number two is the one that Jesus had in mind. So to judge is to express a bad opinion of someone's behaviour, often because you think that you are better than them. So you're looking at what someone else is doing, you're having a go at it, you're thinking negatively about, oh, that person over there, they're doing that stuff and that's awful. And really what's going on is inside you're like, yeah, I'm not like you. I'm better than you. I wouldn't do that. And it's lifting yourself up by looking down on what someone else is doing. Now, we're not talking about the behaviour itself. The behaviour that they're doing might be bad, it might be fine, there might be no problem with it. Maybe it's terrible, maybe it's destructive. That's not really the issue at question here. The issue at question is what's going on inside you when you're judging them. What's going on in your heart? Is it that you think you're better than somebody else? It's horrible to feel judged. I remember years ago when I was getting to know my wife, Emma, and we were doing the thing that is pretty typical at that kind of early stage of a relationship where you're starting to meet significant people in one another's life. I was getting to know some of her friends. I met a bunch of her family members. I got on really well with a whole bunch of people and was feeling quite integrated into the family. But there was one family member who I really struggled to make any progress with. Every time I met this person, I came away thinking, she really doesn't like me. She really has got a problem with me. It's like every little thing I did. So the way I walked was wrong. The way I talked was wrong. The way I ate was wrong. The kind of job that I did was wrong. The opinions that I had were wrong. Everything about me was wrong. I was trying really hard and I was trying to make a good impression. But no matter what I did, it felt like everything was just looked down on, was thought of negatively. It felt horrible. Maybe some of you know what it's like to feel judged, to feel someone looking at you and you can't do anything right. And that survey we saw at the start said that idea of judgmental, of judgy, is more than any other word what people who are outside the church That's the vibe they get from Christians more than any other word. Isn't that mad? Isn't that heartbreaking? When what we're all about, the basis of our message, is we've all stuffed up, we're all sinners, we've all fallen short, and we need God's grace to rescue us. And we've somehow got from that to giving out the vibe of, yeah, but by the way, we are a bit better than you, and you are going to get like looked down on and judged. What? How have we got from one to the other? Perhaps some people get the impression because of the public discourse that's out there, the way maybe high-profile Christians make pronouncements on different issues that just make people feel inferior, like they're not doing well enough. But perhaps it's private interactions as well. Perhaps they've had conversations with people who follow Jesus, who have just felt the need to somewhere slip in. Yeah, we're having a lovely conversation, but by the way, you do need to know that I don't approve of who you are and what you're doing. We just feel the need to slip that into the conversation. And so go away thinking, oh my goodness, I'm so judged by you. Now, Jesus tells a little story to help us think about this idea of judging other people. And there are two problems with judging that come up in this story. So the story is that somebody's trying to point out a little speck. You've got something in your eye, but the person saying it has got like a log. I've only got like a mini fire log, but imagine an even bigger one. I think Jesus, I've got this in my eye. And I'm trying to say, Luke, there's something in your eye. And he's got a little speck. It's ridiculous, isn't it? That's the story, the visual that Jesus gives us. And it means that our image is distorted. Because if I've got this in my eye, and I'm trying to tell you what's going on with you, how can I see clearly? There's something obstructing my vision. My stuff is giving me a distorted perspective of your stuff. I don't have a correct impression. And when you don't have all the facts, when you don't really know what's going on, but you try to make the pronouncement, you're going to get in trouble. I remember one of my first jobs, I worked at a chocolate shop, which was a lovely little kind of summer job while I was studying. And one day, I saw this group of lads leaving the shop with a box of chocolates under their arm. I was like, I'm going to have a word with them. They're trying to nick a box of chocolates. So I went and I confronted them on the door. I was like, excuse me, lads, are you going to pay for that? And then the guy pulls out the receipt and he has just paid for it when I wasn't looking. And there was me steaming in, but I've missed a key piece of information. I've not got everything at my disposal, but I've still acted based on information that's incomplete and actually, in that case, wrong. When we engage with one another, we don't know everything. So if I have a conversation with you, there might be some surface level stuff that I can glean from what you're saying and how you're acting, but I don't know everything about your life. I don't know everything about what's going on with you at the moment. I don't know the background that leads to you acting the way you're acting. And so if I'm quick to judge and write you off based on what I see, then I may well have done that based on a distorted perspective. If I have a conversation with someone and I'm like, well, that person seemed off with me. They were a bit short. They were a bit disengaged with what I was saying. They're just a rude person. And maybe I'm not aware if they've just come off the phone with their boss at work who's told them that they're losing their job. And that's preoccupying their mind. It's nothing to do with being rude. Their mind's occupied with the news that they've just received. Or maybe I look at someone and the habits they've got in life and think, they really need to clean up. These habits are not good for them. They're taking them down. But if I knew what they'd been through and the backstory that led to these things becoming a coping mechanism, then perhaps I'd respond with more compassion. Perhaps I'd respond differently. It might not mean that the habits necessarily are helpful for them, but if I understood the story of how they got there, then perhaps I could reply and respond with more empathy, more kindness, more gentleness, and less, come on, sort your life out, less dismissiveness, less judgmentalism. And the interesting thing is how easy it is to do this with ourselves. You know, if I'm having a bad day, it's easy to fill in the blanks. Yeah, but I'm just like this because this has happened, because this is going on, because I need to do this. We're quick to put kindness and explanation and rationale and see the own picture for our own actions. But when we don't see those pieces on one another, then we can be harsh and judgmental. John Watson says, be kind, that everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle. Here's the second issue. So the first issue is we don't see the whole picture. We're getting a distorted view. The second issue is it's pretty arrogant, isn't it? It's pretty arrogant. If I've got this, but my focus is on the little speck in your eye, what's that saying? It's saying that your stuff is worse than my stuff. That my stuff's no big deal. I'm generally fine. The problem is you. We can be so blind to the fact that often we do the same stuff or our own version of the same stuff that we condemn other people for. There was an article by NPR about 10 years ago, and it was titled this, "Why Doesn't America Read Anymore?" And they posted it on their social media. So it was up there on their Twitter, it was up there on their Facebook. Why doesn't America read anymore? And the little kind of blurb under it is suggesting that in America, there's a new trend to not actually read articles and news stories and gather all the information. It's just to fire off a quick opinion. And to kind of think, I already know this. So I'm well qualified to give my view. Now, it's interesting, because if you see the social comments under this article that NPR posted, you've got hundreds and hundreds of people saying, yeah, it's so terrible. Everyone's doing this. No one's getting the facts anymore. Everyone just wants to give their opinions. If you click through to the article, you'll see this. Congratulations, genuine readers, and happy April Fool's Day. We sometimes get the sense that some people are commenting on NPR stories they haven't actually read. If you're reading this, please like this post and do not comment on it. Then let's see what people have to say about this story. And so you've got these hundreds of people who feel well qualified to give their opinion on how bad it is that everybody else is commenting on things without reading them, who have clearly outed themselves as commenting without reading it. They're judging people for doing something, and then they're doing the same thing themselves. At the heart of judgmentalism is this: your stuff's worse than my stuff. When you do it, it's a problem, but when I do it, it's fine. It's okay. The longer I've gone on as a Christian, the more realizations I've had about my own heart. You know, when I first became a Christian, I was like, I do have some sin stuff, but there's Jesus and it's fine. And over the years, I've seen layers and layers of motivations and attitudes and kind of deeper seated stuff. It's like, oh, there's more than I realised. Oh, actually, yeah, the way I'm coming at that, yeah, that's influenced by selfishness. It's influenced by pride. And seeing these layers in myself, that's been so helpful, seeing these insights about my own heart and starting to develop compassion for other people and their stuff and their issues, and realise, okay, this isn't just them. Actually, my stuff is what I need to focus on. And especially when I think about the grace that God has shown me in spite of my stuff, well, then do I really want to lead with judgment? That's why Jesus says, do not judge so that you may not be judged. For with the judgment you make, you will be judged. So it's pretty clear his message, isn't it? Do not judge. I find it really helpful, though, what he says right after it, because he says something that I think just helps clarify, helps kind of put the parameters and boundaries about what he's saying, what he means, and what he doesn't mean as well. So in verse 6, he says this, which seems like a bit of a jolt, but I do think it links. He says, "Do not give what is holy to dogs, and do not throw your pearls before swine, or they will trample them underfoot and maul you." What he's talking about here is sometimes you'll get situations where you're going to bring something good. So you might be sharing the gospel with someone. You might be giving something of yourself into a relationship or a situation, but it's treated with disdain. So it's like a pearl before a swine. It's not treated well. It's trampled. Maybe it's even harmful and dangerous. Now, the disciples have been sent out into the world. Circumstances like this will occur. Jesus knows it. And what he's telling them is, don't get yourself in a situation where you're giving of yourself and it's just treated disdainfully and harmfully. Don't put yourself in those kind of situations. Don't be naive, is what he said. And I think there's a distinction here, because to recognise those situations, there is a kind of discernment, you could say a kind of judging of what's going on. Is this a pearls before swine situation or not? It's not the same. Judgmentalism and discernment are not quite the same thing. I had a few months ago, I was parking my car in the evening, probably, I don't know, 9:30 or something like that. It's dark. And as I reverse onto my drive, I see a young teenage lad appear next to my car on my drive. Sorry, what's going on here? This is a bit weird. But I get out of the car and says, is everything all right, mate? He says, actually, no, it's not. I'm trying to get home and there's a man on the road and he's walking really weird. It feels like he's been following me all the way from the bus stop and now he's just like pacing backwards and forwards. And I don't really want to, I live down the far end of your road. I don't really want to go in because he'll know where I live. I don't want to walk past him. I feel threatened by him. Now, I was able to help him. I was able to say, okay, well, I'll walk you up to the other end of the road, give your dad a call, he'll come and pick you up in the car and kind of loop round the block and get you home. I was able to help him, but just think about what that lad was doing. He's looking at a circumstance, he's looking at a person, that's this man who's walking in this way that to him seems off, and he's making a judgment. Now, he's not doing the thing that definition said and saying, well, I'm better than him. There was none of that in what he's saying. Nor was he even saying, that guy's definitely up to no good. He didn't have that answer. All he was saying is, there's something about this situation that doesn't feel right, that doesn't feel safe. That's the difference between judgmentalism and discernment. So discerning is this situation safe? Is this okay? There's absolutely scope to remove yourself from those situations. And that's what the lad did. One of them's negative. Judgmentalism is, you're bad, I'm looking down on you, I'm better than you. Discernment is, hey, is this situation safe? Is this okay? Am I in a healthy position here? There are situations where the discernment piece is really important. Think about safeguarding. It's important that we do safeguarding well. Think about destructive relationships we might end up in, harmful situations. It's absolutely right to look at them and remove ourselves. We're not meant to hear that, well, do not judge, so I'm just going to kind of leave my life open to everyone without any thought. That's not what he's saying here. Judging is about hate and writing people off. Discernment's about appropriate, healthy boundaries. Brené Brown says, what do people who consistently extend an assumption of generosity to others share in common? They have a disciplined practice of setting, maintaining and respecting boundaries. Just to say, and just to throw this out there, Kevin, real terms, if some of you are feeling, as you're hearing this, there are particular situations like workplace, other friendships or relationships in your life that you resonate with the verse, do not throw your pearls before swine or they'll trample them underfoot and turn them more. Let this be a red flag moment. And if you need to talk to someone about what's going on, do talk with someone about what's going on. Do that this morning. Let this be a moment for you. Jesus is telling us not to be judgmental and not to be naive. There's a Roman Catholic priest in America called Joe Corpora. And in the Roman Catholic tradition, it's a little bit different to how we would do things. So as part of their worship together, they will confess their sins to a priest. So they'll go into a little confessional booth, do the, Father, I've sinned, and tell the priest about the stuff in their life. And Joe Corpora was asked, what's the most common sin that people confess to you? And I'm sure he hears all sorts of stuff about anger, stuff about lust, stuff about shady business dealings. I bet he's heard it all. And he said, the number one sin that's confessed to me more than any other is judgmentalism. You know, he'll hear from elderly people who would confess to him, I'm so critical of my grandchildren's spouses. He'd hear from people always judging their mother-in-law about everything that's going on. He'd hear confessions of people who were judging not just individuals, but whole groups of people. And he says, whenever someone confesses to me the sin of judgmentalism, I tell them the story of the red car. And the story of the red car is this. One day, Joe Corpora was going to a shop. And he needed to buy something. He found a parking space out on the pavement. So he pulled his car into it, got out, went into the shop, bought what he wanted, got back to his car. When he gets back to his car, he finds that in the space right in front of him, another car has parked, a red car. And this red car has parked so tight up to his bumper that he doesn't have wiggle room to manoeuvre his car out of this space. So he's in his car, and now he's got to sit and wait for this red car to move. And he's getting pretty annoyed, as you would in that situation when you can't move your car. They've not given you room. But what makes it worse is he notices that the engine on the red car is still running. And so someone's obviously parked there and just left the engine running and nipped into the shop to do what they need to do. And at this point, he's fuming, he's getting angry, he's shouting. Now, he doesn't say this, but I would imagine he's there effing and jeffing in his car. I can just picture the scene. He's going at the horn. He's like, beep, beep. He's trying to get the attention. And then he looks up and he sees that in this car, not only is the engine running, but there's someone in the car, sitting in the passenger seat of the car. And so they're fully aware that this person behind them is trying to move. And they're doing nothing. It's like this person in the passenger seat could easily just scoot across to the driver's seat, start the engine, like roll it forward like half a metre and just give me room to move. So he's going even more at the horn, like beep, beep, you've got to move. Eventually, enough's enough. I'm just going to get out of the car and I'm going to let him know what I'm thinking. So he gets out of his car, slams the door of his car, marches up to the passenger window of this other car, like bang, bang, bang. And as the window's winding down, he sees that this person sitting in the passenger seat is blind. And when he sees this, his heart absolutely sinks and he realises, oh my goodness, the way I've been acting was completely inappropriate to the situation because there was something that I didn't know. I'd set up the situation one way, but there was this one piece of information. And if I'd have had that information, I'd have seen the whole thing totally differently. When we think about those people in life that we're prone to judge, that we're prone to write off, that we're prone to dismiss and think, actually, I'm better than you. You should be more like me. You should do things my way. What is that one piece of information that we don't have? What's the one thing we don't know about their life? We may not know what they're going through right now, what they're carrying, what they've experienced in the past. And so we form our judgments and we get harsh and we get uncompassionate with those around us. And this is where God's judgments are so different to ours. Because God doesn't look at anyone. He doesn't look at you. He doesn't look at me. He doesn't look at that person we're prone to judge with an incomplete picture. He doesn't look at them and think, well, I'll reach this conclusion, but only because I don't know X, Y, Z. Jacob Paulus says, God has all the data. God has all the information. God knows exactly why we are like we are. And then here's the kicker. And he says, thus, he is always ready to forgive and to show mercy. God knows it all. God knows the depths of our hearts. He knows how deep our own flaws and our own sin goes. He knows about the log that we're carrying in our eye. And yet he's ready to forgive and show mercy. It says in Isaiah chapter 1, come now, says the Lord, though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be like snow. Though they are red like crimson, they shall become like wool. He gave his son to die on the cross so that we can be forgiven. Who are we then to go out in the world judging and condemning those around us? For some of us, we think about those lists at the start, the lists of judgy, hypocritical, self-righteous, all that stuff. And then the list of gentle and compassionate and the vision that Jesus had for the kingdom. And we think, I want to be more like that. I want to be more like that list on this side. And the bit of the passage we've not really covered, Jesus says, ask and it will be given to you. Search and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. These characteristics don't come about by our own efforts primarily, but as a gift of the Spirit. So perhaps you want to ask God, God, fill me again with your Spirit and make me anew like this kind of person you're calling me to be. Perhaps some of you, as we've been talking, you've just been pretty aware of whatever the log is in your own eye. You've been having your own stuff come to mind, and perhaps it's a moment before God to turn away from whatever that is, to deal with your own stuff with him. And perhaps some of you, maybe what you resonate with is being on the other end of it. Maybe that has been your experience of people who call themselves Christians, that they've come across as judging you, as hypocritical towards you. If that's you, firstly, can I just say, I'm really sorry that you've had to experience that, because that is not the way of Jesus, and that's not the way he wants his people to be. And perhaps if you've experienced that, my prayer for you is this could be a moment of healing, where you meet with the gentle, kind, safe Spirit of God.
Thanks for listening.
To explore this sermon or learn more about our church, please navigate to the links provided in this podcast description.
From there, you can connect with us on social media, and you're welcome to check out the music links featured in this episode from our very own musicians.
You can also discover current events and information about where we meet on Sundays and various groups or community projects that you can join in with.
If you're interested in knowing more about us or wish to join us for one of our meetings, please reach out.
Simply drop us an email at hello@ccm.org.uk.
We look forward to connecting with you.